Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I'm your host today as we all experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff that you need to thrive and survive in a global economy. So, on this program, we like to invite guests who like to have fun and also have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So please, please let me know if there's any topics you'd like addressed in future episodes or any guests that you would like to see on the show. If you haven't already, we are coming to you live on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, a bunch of stuff. And so whatever platform that you're joining us on, subscribe. Go ahead and subscribe to the program because then you're going to get notified when we do live streams in the future. Also, I've gone a long time without plugging something that I want to plug right now, which is our shop, the multilingual shop. You see that I'm wearing my cool NIMSY hat here. Perhaps, you know, conference season is starting up again and you want to show your support for the industry or perhaps you know, show your support for Multilingual Magazine or NIMSY Insights. Head on over to the Multilingual Mercantile and use discount code NIMSY Live for a 25% checkout or 25% discount upon checkout. And once again, let's look at the upcoming events. Oh, you know what? We're not going to be doing upcoming events today because I have a surprise for you coming up on future episodes of NIMSY Live in the way that we're going to be handling the events. But well, since you're expecting it, might as well just take a look at this here. Upcoming events, if you're not familiar already, there's great industry events calendars available from NIMSY, available from Multilingual Magazine. You head on over there, nimsy.com/events, and you're going to see, look at us. We're here on the event, NIMSY Live. There's an event coming up from Be Lazy tomorrow, the American Translators Association. Go check it out for yourself. Filter for your region or topic of interest. And, yeah, I think that's a great tool for you to have. All right, we got the housekeeping out of the way, I think, here. Like I said, we're here on NIMSY Live. We've got a bunch of people I can't see right now. We've got a bunch of people logged in here. Go ahead and comment. This is a very interactive thing. Go ahead and comment in the comment section. Slam those reaction buttons. If you see something, you can hit those as many times as you like. You don't just like a live stream once. If you want to show your support for something that our guest says today or anything like that, go ahead and use those reaction buttons. And one more piece of housekeeping. If this stream does get interrupted today, then I would say head on over to NIMSY's YouTube channel. It's a little bit more stable of a streaming platform. So sometimes things happen on LinkedIn. And but we're live streaming all over the place. You'll find us. I'm not worried about it. Okay, without further ado, today's guest is my colleague, Miguel Sepulveda. Miguel, all right, first off the bat, I'm already throwing out my script because I've been criticized for pronouncing your name wrong. Sepulveda or Sepulveda?
Sepulveda.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
So Renato's making me second guess myself as usual. So anyways, Miguel Sepulveda, Global Localization Director at King, creator and contributor at YoLocalizo.com, which, you know what, I just have to plug that really quick. Localizo.com. If you haven't checked this out, sorry Miguel, we'll do a better plug later, but this is a great resource, YoLocalizo, and YoLocalizo.com, and this is Miguel's blog, and, you know, if he wasn't such a great colleague for us here at NIMSY, then I would shamelessly be stealing his content and stealing his ideas for my own. It's just a really great platform, so go over and check that out if you have time after the stream, of course. But my background with Miguel is here at NIMSY, and Miguel has an e-learning course that he does for, amongst other things, for NIMSY clients about data-driven metrics and KPI ecosystems and all that stuff. And I've had the pleasure of joining him on those workshops before, which is, you know, one of the coolest workshops that we do. And perhaps we can talk a little bit about it later. But I've always been very impressed. Miguel, he's always full of well-considered insights, and I'm really glad he's joining us today. So if you know Nimsy, you should also know Miguel. You should also know YoLocaliso.com. So make sure to, you know, follow him on LinkedIn and check out YoLocaliso.com. One last introduction, of course, is you guys, the chat. You guys down in the comment section, you're the most important guest here today. So we have, let's check the numbers, shall we? We have, well, of course, it's not going to tell me, but, oh, 90. Wow, look at you. 90 people watching us live. That's just on LinkedIn. Nice. Oh, that's pretty cool. Wow, no pressure. Yeah. So 90 people joining us today, so make sure your voices are heard. Introduce yourself in chat, ask questions, and we'll try our best to get through those. I don't have an operator today. I don't have a moderator today, so I'll try my best to get through the questions as much as possible. We are going to try to keep our conversation to 45 minutes and with questions and, of course, and all of that stuff, but we'll see how that goes. Anything happens on a live. So that's it. That's my introduction. Miguel, welcome to the show. It's good to have you, sir.
Thank you very much, Tucker. Happy to be here. And yes, we need to find ways to do more sessions. That workshop was really good, and I enjoy doing it together. So, yeah.
That was. I have to admit, I do a lot of workshops for different clients, but that was one of my favorite workshops to do, perhaps because it was new. It's not something that I've been talking about for like 5 years, 10 years. But I've got to admit, I joke about stealing your stuff, but I've been taking your slides from that workshop and using them in other workshops, and it's really good.
No worries about the stealing. I have to admit that I also stole your ideas from your book.
Nice. So, nice.
So they say sharing is caring, right?
Sharing is caring.
So we're fine.
Yeah. Shamelessly steal. All right. Well, let's get into it. People don't want to hear us just chit-chat and, you know, subtly plug Nimsy e-learning courses. What they want to talk about is return on localization investment. So you're the guy I reached out to. There's a number of people I could have reached out to in this industry to talk about this, but you're the guy I wanted to talk to about this because of your data-driven approach to it, which is coupled with or perhaps tempered by what I would call a realistic, like, practicality. A practical approach to return on investment. But before we get going, what is ROI? You know, and specifically, what is your relationship with ROI? Like, how have you come across this as a challenge or a concept needing to present return on investment or measure that in your career?
ROI is a unicorn, a mythical idea. And my relationship with this concept of ROI, return of investment, has been changing quite a bit throughout my career. Because at the beginning of my career, when I was working as a QA manager for Lionbridge, I thought it was very important and a useful metric to justify the system of my team and our services. But over time, I changed my mind and went from being a fan of localization metrics related to ROI to being skeptical of ROI metrics.
So I hope our viewers don't see this as a bait and switch. Let's see what we're doing here. But what do you mean by skeptic? Let's unpack that a little bit.
I think the ROI topic and all these discussions that we've been talking in the industry for so many years, I think it doesn't do our industry any good because it creates a false expectation that we can measure the benefit of localization with a formula. I believe it gives the impression that we as localization professionals are dressing up, I don't know, like Indiana Jones and look for this holy grail of the industry, right? Which is the ROI. And we look for something that personally, I don't think it's possible. I think it's rather simplistic view of the localization industry, trying to calculate the impact of localization activities with a formula. The typical ROI formula of amount gain minus amount spent, then the percentage, I think it's too simplistic, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, for those of you that are listening that perhaps aren't aware of like what is ROI, what is return on investment, and perhaps it bears clarifying. Return on investment is traditionally measured as essentially amount that you gain versus, as to put it how Miguel puts it, amount that you gain over the amount that you put out. So typically revenue over expenses associated with a certain thing. And the holy grail, as we, you know, somewhat ironically or sarcastically call it here, is how do you measure that on for localization? Because by the time localization comes around, a lot of those investments have already been made. So that's kind of how we're getting into it. So it's revenue over cost. So I thought that we could kind of break this down into, you know, let's start by talking about the costs, because to me, measuring costs is somewhat easier than measuring revenue, and especially measuring forecasted revenue. But still, we've got direct cost versus indirect cost, variable cost versus fixed costs, and we need to understand how to apply these to localization. And in the course of doing some research for this, and I did a post yesterday on my personal profile on LinkedIn, which includes all of the links to the quotes, the sources for all of the quotes that we're going to be using. So go check me out, my personal profile. You know, follow me on LinkedIn. Oh God, self-loathing is real. I shouldn't say that. But yeah, do it, because I post cool stuff like that. But there's a very nice white paper from Lilt titled The Ultimate Guide to Measuring Localization ROI. And I found this in my research. And let me see if I can pull it up here. Here we go. And very nice white paper from Lilt called The Ultimate Guide to Measuring Localization ROI. And it outlines different types of costs that could be accounted for into localization. It breaks it down into three types. And we have tools and tech stack, human resources, and translation costs. And I was just wondering if, you know, what are your thoughts on this, Miguel? Sorry, chat, I'm going to get you out of the way.
Yeah, I think these are factors that must be taken into account. I miss in this list the research cost, everything that has to do with user experience, with content writing. Nowadays, we pay much more attention to user experience when creating a website or any software in general. So I think that ROI does not quantify. I mean, if we are not really considering the cost of the focus groups and the cost of the UX writing and all these different pieces, they cannot be really be considered like the whole cost. And and overall, what I think is that it's true that we can quantify some costs, typical ones we know around the price per word and all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. It's a lot of more than that. I mean, when I think, well, if you think like, I don't know, if you grab a phone and you think about your favorite application, until we see it here, until I see here in Spanish in my phone, it has gone through so many, many phases that it's really difficult to factor all those costs. Because, for example, in any digital product, everything, it has started in the ideation phase, in which a development team works its head off defining what's the product about, who will use. And then we have the design phase, where all these wireframes are created, the storyboard, customer journey, user testing. A lot of effort and work has been invested, and practically no programming has started yet, because that's what is done in the next phase, the development phase, where all the research and finding, everything is code, the audio's added, the graphics included. And once that's ready, when we have all these activities, then we have the launch of the product with all the marketing campaigns and the customer support. All that is many, many hours of work. And how we quantify that from a honest ROI perspective, it's not just the cost of taking, for example, 10,000 words multiplied by price per word, and then add the LQA fees hourly, and then PM fees, and so on. It's not as simple as that. We are missing all that research and development. So that's why I'm skeptical with one big part of the formula.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're joking, but I'm already seeing people in chat. From David Altman says, did he say there's no formula to calculate translation ROI? I'm out. So David, if you're still hanging in there with us, yeah, just stick around. We'll have some more here. Let's You know, I've got a bunch of these quotes that I just want to get through. So I think that might be a cool way to structure this conversation. Let's move on to the next one here. And so back in an interview from the old Globally Speaking podcast, my business partner Renato and Michael Stevens, of course, have used to run the Globally Speaking podcast with RWS. Nowadays, they're doing a different one. It's called the Global Podcasts. But back in a 2018 interview, Joel Salheen from Domo, he was a director at Domo at the time. He had this to say about localization and discussing and proving the ROI, which is the most successful companies, and I wish I had the podcast recording, I should have played that, but I'll just read it. The most successful companies' localization teams are teams where the C-suite is very aware of the importance of international revenue. The cost of development for localization is a sunk cost. So adding a country is a marginal additional cost that should essentially bring more revenue. One of the things that always impressed me is that it's very hard to find a company that drops a language. So in this quote, what we're seeing here is he's talking about marginal cost versus sunk costs. Because when we're looking at things like the cost of development and the cost of, you know, going through the whole product development from ideation onwards, all of that you were talking about, a strong argument can be made that that's a sunk cost. By the time it gets to the globalization department, that's actually a sunk cost. And so should there be a way to allocate those sunk costs into a ROI calculation if you're going to attempt to? And I'm sorry, Miguel, I know that your thesis here is that it sometimes doesn't make sense to calculate ROI, but I also know that there's people in the audience that really want to do this and get creative about it. So what can you tell me about sunk versus marginal costs?
I didn't know about this quote, and I really
I didn't either. Yeah,
I really recognize the last part was saying company that drops a language, and I can tell you and the audience actually a real anecdote that might fit very well with this quote, and with how we could approach this from a data-driven perspective.
I love it. Story time. Go for it.
Yeah. Because a few years ago, around this time, early November, which is when we buyers are in budgeting forecast season, we started to consider what would happen if we discontinue any language, a few languages, in one of our games. What might happen? And specifically, we were thinking about what might happen if we remove Scandinavian languages. So I remember my team was surprised by this hypothesis from the beginning, because our goal is to reach as many people as possible through the different tasks of globalization, not to suddenly take away languages that we are already offering localized. And in that sense, the work of my team was crucial and very well executed, as they helped me to argue and prepare my meetings about forecasting with my senior stakeholders. And we prepare metrics that show that the cost of localization of a product that is already on the market is very low compared to the cost of development. Developing a game costs millions of euros, and the localization phase costs thousands of euros. So everyone who wants to add everything, you can put all the different pieces of the sunk cost. And when you take that as a percentage of the whole development part, it's going to be just a very small percentage. But also, going back to the ACE idea of discontinued languages, while it's true that the level of English, of Norwegian, Swedish, Danish, those languages that we were considered to discontinue, it's true that these people, they have very high English, they are super proficient. It's not less true that users, even in those countries with high English, they prefer to consume content in the mother tongue and in their native language. And if it's content for entertainment, such as video games, localization is even more important to achieve the local engagement that every video game publisher might be looking for. So in situations like these, where on one hand you have some teams arguing that discontinuing languages is not a good option, but on the other hand, there are other teams questioning the value of localized content in high proficient countries. Mm. in situations like this, the best thing to do.
I know what you're going to say. You're going to go into the A-B testing, aren't you?
A-B testing.
All right.
And that's
here
what
we
did. And that's what I did. And we did an A-B testing, and that's amazing to see. Every time I encourage everyone the possibility they have to organize an A-B testing, do it. Because it's amazing the insight you have there. What we did is that we chose
just really quickly, and for the sake of inclusivity. I mean, we have a lot of students in our audience, and you know, folks early in their careers. A/B testing is something that's largely used in marketing, and I'm not an expert. I'm just trying to define it here, but essentially, you'll take two different versions of a product and you put it out there. So, it's great for marketing because you can send two different versions of an email campaign and see which subject line works better. It's A or B, and then you can adjust course accordingly. So that's what we're talking about when we go into A/B testing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we did. We chose one version, and we put it in English, and we segmented some players that they only saw the English version, and we did the same with the Danish version in this case. So without being able to go into the details of metrics for confidentiality reasons, the engagement metrics of the players who played the localized build, the localized version, the B version, was way better. And another very important aspect to consider is that we received emails in the customer support team asking what had happened to the game, if it was broken, why didn't Danis was there, what happened? They explained that they restarted their mobile devices and it was only English. Where was the Danish? And those emails, I keep them like gold, as by combining the localization cost plus sunk cost, calculating percentage of that total versus the total development cost. With all that, we create a very powerful business case in terms of cost metrics. But what is more important than the cost is that the engagement metrics of the localized version versus the non-localized were way better. And on top of that, we have customer emails saying, what happened here? I cannot see my language. So that's, for me, was like the dream scenario, because we have metrics with cost for those ones who love these formulas. We have engagement metrics, and we have customer experience, knocking out the door of the customer team and saying, where is my Danish? What's going on here? So I have those ones secure in different places because it's my favorite business case that I was able to put together.
That's awesome. And I love asking the customers, right? I look at it. I've got three kids, all 5 years and under. Right. So I've got three kids, and asking customers is like what my kids will do is they'll come to me and I'll give them an answer I don't like, or they'll go to my wife and she'll give them an answer that they don't like. And then they'll go to somebody else. They'll go to the other parent and get the answer that they want. And I'll say, well, daddy says, well, mommy says, and I look at asking the customers as, you know, it's a great way to like go ask mommy. Right. You know, if your boss says, no, we don't want to do that. It's like, well, let's go ask our customers and see what they do, because there are a few bosses out there that are going to not take customer feedback lately. You bring up a point about, you know, there's just so many different ways to measure. When we think of return on investment, we're thinking in monetary terms typically. And of course, we like to, you know, make things as objective as possible. But there are so many different ways to measure translation, return on your translation investment. And I found this awesome little infographic as part of a larger article available with Rapport International over on their blog, link down there in the description. But they're talking about, you know, these are some of the effects of localization: increased sales, increased exposure, customer appeal, converting leads, lead conversion, increased customer satisfaction. That's what we're talking about right now. Meeting compliance regulations, workforce retention, and making sure that your message and your brand message is accurate out there. And you know, it kind of, and I could go on, because let's take a look at another one here. We've got right here, this is going to be from Localize. I got all of these slides together here. I love it. And here is kind of along the same lines. There's a little bit of overlap with what we saw from Rapport International, but the guys over at Localize, and this Pavel Yakovlev, I've never met you before, Pavel, but I slapped your picture up here. I hope you're okay with that. But it's a good article. Go look at it if you're watching this. Anyways, measuring the ROI of localization. They're measuring it for, and that's the name of the article, incremental sales in new locations, SEO keyword ranking. These are all like KPIs. So what I'm trying to do here is trying to make the subjective objective, right? Because when we're talking about ROI, if my boss asks me for an ROI calculation, I'm going to freak out and say, oh my gosh, what he means is he wants to know exactly how much money we made and how much money we spent and all of that. But perhaps I can shift that conversation away from money while still remaining objective with my performance indicators like these. Market share, cost of translations, page views, conversion rates, social media engagement, and customer support cases is a good one. Do you have any experience with that, Miguel?
Yeah, because in the sense that when you have good localization, you have less complaints for the clients, mm-hmm. and then you are reducing the overhead in the customer team. So it's all related with a good quality of the localization itself, and that will mean that there are more happy clients.
But once again, very hard to measure. Right, because you're essentially measuring a decrease, but you don't know what it's decreasing from, really. So, you know, maybe this could be an area for A/B testing. Would it be possible, in your experience, Miguel? Does it make sense to do A/B testing across languages? So, or are languages and markets so culturally specific where you need to do A/B testing, refine it within individual languages?
You mean from a customer support perspective?
Yeah, I'm just all over the place right now. I think I was trying to go back to your A/B testing, but the customer support.
Okay. Yeah, for the A/B, I mean, I think we will get the same results because for me, what it was important is that if in countries with a high English proficient, if they already prefer the localized version, then if you go to average countries like Spain in terms of English, those engagement indicators are going to be even higher than in Sweden or in Norway. So I never found every time in my career that I have done an A/B, it does not matter the language, always, the version localized outperforms the English. Oh, I've always seen that, always.
Are you sure? You don't sound sure.
Always.
Okay.
Well, every time. Yeah. I have not seen any single game or product that I've been involved that we segmented users and say, hey, English, hey, localize. Always the retention metrics, the engagement metrics, the length of the sessions. I always saw the localized version higher than the English one.
I have no rebuttal for that. I'm trying to think of a challenging statement. You know, I have had in my career in the past, like certain markets reflecting. So when I was working for a client, software firmer, hardware and client, they were pushing into Malaysian. Indonesian, it doesn't matter, I'm not naming names, right? They're pushing into a Southeast Asian language and paying a lot of money for it, paying a lot of money to localize into that language. And I was working at the LSP, and I was managing their in-country marketing teams. There's the subsidiary review process. So I was in direct contact with this company's in-country marketing teams. And they would tell me over and over and over again. It was Malaysian, I remember now. They'd say, stop localizing into Malaysian. Stop sending these localizations. Stop sending us these translations. We don't want to review them. We don't want to use them. Everybody uses this device in English. They don't want Malaysian. Now, the reason I don't see that as really a counterpoint to your statement that always people prefer the local language is because I wasn't talking to the users. I was talking to the in-country marketing teams. And this just goes to show the difference. I think a lot of companies think that they're in touch with the pulse of their user base because they have in-country subsidiaries or they have people, salespeople or marketing folks on the ground in the different countries. But there's a difference there between doing what your local marketing managers want and doing what your local users want.
That sounds very, very, very close to my current situation, because I work for a company that they are headquarters in the States and in London, and the marketing team is sitting in the UK. And obviously, there's going to be always these conversations around, do we need to localize and do we need to adapt and blah, 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 blah. And it's absolutely different, the conversation, if I talk to the people in London versus talking to, in this case, our players, our international players. Because what they are going to tell you, and we do that with surveys that we send them, very short surveys, and they prefer the localized version. If they can choose, they prefer the localized version. And that's going to be different if you talk to the marketing people in London, right? Because they don't see it like that. Talk to the players, talk to the users. They prefer to use the localized version. So that's the ROI. Even if it's not a formula, that's the ROI.
That's those, you know, the eight things that we saw in the report from Rapport International or from Ilt or, that's that. Interesting. We've been doing a lot of, well, maybe not a lot of, I'm not ready for you yet, Natalie. We've been doing a lot of helping clients talk to their I mean, at the end, I'm trying to think of a way to put it, but at the end of the day, it's helping clients communicate with their end users. Here at NIMSY's running different studies. We have this banner of XLQA, Experiential Language Quality Assessment, that we've been having a lot of interesting discussions on around with our clients, and there is definitely an appetite for more here to find out about it's particularly. In all of the research that I did, compiling all of these quotes, like from Natalie, but I'm going to skip Natalie for now. All of the research that I did, I was like surprised to see a pretty consistent focus on customer experience, because I went into this trying to understand what are people talking about return on investment. And every article or research paper I read kept leading me back to CX or UX or customer experience. And I want to highlight Ben over from Group Q now, but 20 years ago, it looks like young Benjamin was at Lionbridge writing papers for Software Business, the magazine for software executives. This is, no shit, 20 years ago. Like, this is from like 2002. I think that I found this. So whoever Lionbridge, I think, deserves credit for preserving this in their archives. Thank you, Lionbridge. This was written 20 years ago, and he's talking in this article, and the link is there, of course, about things that are hard to measure. And he's talking about market share, brand equity, competition, cost of support, customer satisfaction, expectations. So this isn't a new conversation that we've been having on what is the intersection between customer experience, customer satisfaction, and return on investment. But what I do think has happened in the last 20 years is the maturity of the industry and the maturity of the relationship our industry has with other departments and other industries has evolved, which is making conversations more fruitful, I would say. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Miguel. I kind of went off on a tangent.
Ben was a visionary 20
years ago. Wow. Yeah, I think I put it in my LinkedIn post. I was like, either we haven't been we've been talking about the same things for 20 years, or Ben is a psychic. You decide.
Well, I think he's still right. The conversation that we are having nowadays about customer experience, it's totally relevant. And for this, I think there is a lot of talk about customer centricity, about delighting our customer. I mean, all this customer experience, putting the customer at the center. But then what I find is that it's curious that we question the value of localization. Because one of the most important factors to have happy customers is that they understand what they read when they use something, right? So I don't know how we can even plan customer centricity without taking into account the most human thing a customer has, which is their language. And nothing can be more customer centric than speaking to a customer in their language. So that's why I like to say that localization is user experience. And that's why if we find a way to articulate this, this is another important part of the rationale behind the ROI and the rationale about why customer experience and localization is so connected. Because it's I don't understand that you can have happy clients if they don't understand the product for international speakers. So Ben was right.
Yeah, and you can, just so people know that you got street cred here, and I realize I'm neglecting you, chat. I'll get back to you, see if there's anything in there. But just so people realize that you have street cred here is Miguel actually has an e-learning course, and he teaches workshops and writes, and UX and the intersection between UX and localization has been a big, big topic for you, right, Miguel? It's kind of one of your passions that you like to talk about and write about. So go check, and of course, you know, we have other stuff on mclearning.com. Just go check it out. That was my thinly veiled plug here. So we talked about Ben, and I want to get back to this concept. No, let's go over to chat and see. Sorry guys, I'm unorganized. Let's go to Natalie. Natalie, you had no idea that you were going to be guest starring on this show today, but here you are. Natalie Kelly, who of course is something. The reason I'm interested in Natalie Kelly isn't because of her position; it's because she's an incredibly smart woman and a freaking phenomenal writer. You know, every time I open up Natalie's blog, Miguel, maybe you can relate. You're a writer too. Every time I open up borntobeglobal.com, I'm like, God damn, Natalie, she can write. And she's written a couple articles, blog posts on borntobeglobal.com. Please go check that out on return on investment here. And she says, asking localization teams to figure out their ROI, that's a bit like asking the finance department to compute ROI, or the HR department, or the facilities team, or, well, any other function that is simply mission critical for doing business, if you're international, that is. Instead, it's better to focus on impact. And you know, I don't think we need to talk about this so much, because this is what we've been talking about. It's like, how do we shift that conversation from a financial conversation to an impact, a customer impact conversation? But did you have anything to add to this?
I like this idea of focusing on impact. And for me, focus on impact is to look at what metrics we can access that influence the decision of the product owners and the leadership team. Localization metrics that influence decisions. For me, that's the key. Traditional KPIs do not justify our value to the business. Operational KPIs such as, total number of words localized per language or number of linguistic errors, average scores per word, are not adequate metrics to show the impact of localization. Of course, those are metrics we need to have, but those are the metrics we should collect from an efficiency point of view to know internally within the localization team how our localization strategy is going. But these are not the metrics we should show our stakeholders to show the impact. Instead, it's better to focus on the performance of multilingual content. It's much better to focus on customer experience metrics, and it's definitely crucial to focus on business metric. We should look for those metrics where we collect revenue-related indicators and then map those indicators to different elements of our localization strategy and localization ecosystem. Strategic metrics that influence decisions, that's for me impact.
Nice. I wanted you to talk so I could buy me some time to check out the comments, because I don't have a moderator today. But I've been looking at chat here. David Altman, still with us, says, let's suppose you have the CEO of a mid-sized company who discusses the tech doc department discuss this with the tech doc department if it's worth it to translate more user manuals, and if yes, if they should simply do it with free online services or with an LSP. Oh, there's a lot to unpack here, David. How would you go about helping the decision regarding the ROI of localization? I'll see if I can scroll down to his, because I don't see it up here. But did you get that, Miguel? Essentially, someone wants to understand what is the ROI of localizing technical documentation. And or more accurately put, it sounds like someone's boss wants to understand what is the ROI of localizing technical documentation. I have a very short answer to that, but maybe you can say something intelligent before I give my piece.
I'm not sure if it's intelligence, because actually that's the worst type of content to value the ROI.
All right, so you're not going to be any nicer than I would be. I'd be like, if you're talking about ROI of technical documentation, I think there is a conversation to have there, though. I don't want to, David, I'm not trying to write you off here, because there could be a conversation to have there, especially if we're talking about, like we said it earlier, you and I said it, about the reduced costs and support and post-sale support and customer support. So my hypothesis would be, and perhaps that's my answer to you, David, is it's all about building hypotheses, not finding answers, right? It's about testing hypotheses, not reporting on data, because you have to build these hypotheses and then test them with your users. So I would build a hypothesis that is, first I would need to know how much money is it currently costing to provide post-sale support, Do we have call centers? When someone can't understand the language, what happens and how much money does it cost us? But if we don't have that, then it becomes a very short conversation, because typically, we have what we call pre-sales and post-sales and content products services. And pre-sale services that's where the budget goes. People like, companies like spending money on pre-sales because it's going to generate more revenue. Once they've sold the product, they've got your money. So they're less likely to spend a lot of money making localized versions of the technical documentation. So
yeah, one of the tricky parts with technical documentation versus other type of content is that all these potential metrics you could follow as site traffic or social media engagement or conversion, you cannot really use them. So you have less variety of metrics to choose from in technical documentation that you might have in a website.
Yeah. And I see another quote here from Rodrigo Cristina here. Says, like in any investment evaluation project, because this is what I want to get into in the next part of our conversation, is we talked about cost, right? We talked about how do we figure out kind of the cost of localization. That's the bottom or the top part, the bottom part. I don't know. It's part of the equation. We talked about revenue and how tricky it is to do it. So perhaps instead of looking just at revenue, we should look at some other objective value measures that are coming back when we're taking our calculation. But now I want to talk about, forecasting value. So not just like what value does localization bring, but how do we forecast? Because if we want to go, we can be a globalization. Okay, so let me get to Rodrigo's statement here, because I liked it, which is Rodrigo Cristina says, like in any investment evaluation project, estimation is the key term. Measuring the impact of localization up front is no different from any other industry from a modelization perspective. Making the right assumptions about revenue streams, costs, and estimating how the model will evolve is exactly how every other industry operates when the decision makers need to approve or reject an investment project. I like a number of these words that you used in here, Rodrigo. So making the right assumptions. What do I have Miguel there? Making the right assumptions. Because we need to make assumptions when we're approaching this. We don't have all of the data. And there's no shame in making educated assumptions. So making the right assumptions about revenues, streams, costs, and estimating. Once again, estimating. We're making those hypotheses, right? I like everything about this statement here. What do you have? What can you tell us, Amigo? What do you have to say about forecasting the value? So let's say I know I'm a globalization director, and I know we're hot I'm just going to make something up. We're hot in Canada, right? Like everyone in Canada loves our product, especially the in Quebec. So we need to localize into French Canadian, right? I know it. You know it. Everybody knows it. My boss doesn't know it, right? So I need to go convince my boss. We need to localize into French Canadian. And the boss says, well, I want to see a business case. Right? They're probably not even going to ask for, I want to see an ROI evaluation. They're going to say, I want to see a business case. But implied in there is like, how much money is this going to make me? What's going to be my return on that? So how would I approach that? How would you approach that, Miguel?
I will approach it that localization alone does not mean growth. But it's also true that a company that does not bet on localization will not see international growth either, because we open door with the localization.
Say that again. Localization doesn't mean growth?
Localization alone, if you just localize alone, localization, and that's the only thing you do, and you don't support that with marketing activities, for example, just by doing localization, you are not growing. You are growing when you are combining many different actors here. So a good service, a good marketing campaign, a product that is working, and everything, you need to glue that with localization, because if they don't understand what they are using, you don't even get the opportunity there to open the door. So it's always working localization as a revenue enabler. It's always opening door. But then you need to combine that to amplify the message, because with if you just have it with one language, you have it with one language. If you have it in more languages, you are increasing the reachability, and you will influence more potential buyers as if you do it in just one single language. So it works for me. The localization activity is like a speaker that you are sending the message louder. So with a website, with a digital app, if you localize and that's the only thing you do, probably that's not enough. But if you localize and then you have a marketing campaign, and then you have a good product, and then you have a good customer, and everything you are linking and syncing back to localization, then is when you are going to be having a solid product. And then to forecast the revenue in the future, you can have some sort of competitive analysis. Nowadays, there are a lot of metrics, so you can look for some product. You can look of your potential target, your market size, and work with some percentages. But the very first thing you need to do is to have the product ready in the relevant language, and then ensuring that this is properly communicated. That's why I like to say that localization alone, it will not reach that far, because we need also to have that the combination of marketing. Take, for example, one app, one game. Nowadays, there are thousands of games. I could be in a startup. I can create a game. I localize the game. How my potential users know that the game is there? How do they know it?
Right.
They will not know it. They don't know it. We need the marketing muscle. We need the customer care muscle. We need to have a good product. So when everything is sequential, then we are in a good position.
I heard a quote the other day, and I forget who it's from, but it's like, never release your product on an unsuspecting market. And I love that quote, because it's like, no, you got to pave the way, and you got to pave the way in the local language on that.
Yeah.
I want to take a look at, you know, I'm going to succubus myself off of Born to be Global again, because there was another great article on there with a quote from Jeff Beatty here. Beatty, I think I'm pronouncing your name right. Sorry, Jeff. Revenue enabler versus revenue driver. So Jeff says ROI is an inaccurate, and you know. So really quickly, let me credit the article. It's an article from June 2020 written by Natalie Kelly titled "Measuring the Value of Localization," and it quotes Jeff Beatty here, and it says, ROI is an inaccurate and false metric for localization, feature development, and release engineering. The list goes on, because it's based on often false assumptions and prophetic predictions about the market. Translation is a revenue enabler, not a revenue generator. That's what you just said, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you just said.
Open doors.
Yeah.
You open doors.
I like that. I'm going to say that again. Translation is a revenue enabler, not a revenue generator. Because we try to fit it into the generator concept, we get stuck with the false ROI metric. The enablement concept can clear the way for us to focus more on opportunity, outcomes, purpose, and process, and less on moving units, which he defines as words. So what do you have to say about it? I think we already talked about this. It's essentially saying what you just said in other words.
I think that's the right mindset, because it's facilitating clients to find the product in a language they understand. So they, through localization, we enable the rest of the processes. So I like that. I think that's very accurate.
All right. I think I'm out of fancy quotes from people. I think I got to everybody here. Let's head on over to chat. If there's anything over in chat, where's my button? Chat. Wow, there's a lot of great conversation in here that is just chit-chatting back and forth with each other, which I love. You know, the chat is not just for sending questions to us. So that's great. Chit-chat with each other. Answer each other's questions. Jose Palomares says, and a small investment in a self-service bot could drive users to the right docs for good percent. Oh, that's part of another conversation. I apologize. Jose Palomares says, this is why this comment caught my eye. He says, 100% agree with you, Tucker. Ticket deflection. Support tickets that don't need a support agent to resolve them because documentation can do it for them is a good way to show ROI for docs. I wanted to highlight that because we were kind of at a loss for that. So ticket deflection. I've never heard that one before. That's an interesting one. Thank you, Jose. But with that, we are coming up on the hour, guys, and I want to start thinking about closing it up here. We started talking about, you were the first person to bring it up, the holy grail of localization is ROI. I've heard it referred to that so many times. I'm not sure who the first person was to refer to it. I've certainly done it. Is this a false crusade? If we're going after the Holy Grail, you know, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, is this a false crusade? Are we going after the wrong thing? Have we chosen wisely? Sorry, couldn't resist. When choosing to speak about localization ROI? Or should we keep doing it? I'm not trying to get any answer out of you here.
I think it's the combination of...
Let us know in chat what you guys think, too.
Yeah, I think it's the combination of so many moving pieces that we need to have a wider approach. And we need to understand that every piece of content is going to be different in terms of metrics, and every type of business is going to be different. And what I don't like is the simplicity view of the formula. That's why I like to combine with metrics that influence other metrics, because that's how you engage in a productive conversations with your product owners. If you are able to show them with some site traffics that the number of unique visits from target locale, they are increasing, because now you are operating in a locale that is localized, that's a good conversation to have. If you can have metrics around the organic traffic by location, and you can do some sort of A/B that before being localized in a certain territory and after, and you can offer some numbers there with the number of page views, with the average time on page per locale, the bounce rate of localized pages, or I don't know, in social media, if you can see that the audience growth rate is higher in the localized channels, all those are very valuable metrics, but they are not easy ones. That's why I don't like the simplicity of the ROI formula, because it's a little bit lazy. You need to find metrics that are helping you to have this conversation. because it impacts localization, makes a lot of sense. But we need to find the right metrics to deliver this message.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
I would equate it to something that we can all perhaps relate to, is if you've ever had to explain to perhaps a new client who wasn't familiar with localization, that it's not as easy as you think it should be, then I would say apply those same arguments to ROI against yourself, right? Like, it's important. Saying it's not easy, saying is not saying that it's not important. It's an important conversation to be having, because at the end of the day, we need to understand the value as a team, as a globalization team, that we bring to the table. We need to understand that value for the sake of our company and for the sake of, I would say, our own self-worth. So let's start wrapping this up. I think it's about time. We got about 4 minutes left, so we're going to go to a segment, everybody's favorite segment that always gets screwed up, which is Tuck's takeaways. And these are my takeaways from the conversation, and with rife with misspellings, usually, because I'm taking these notes as I do this here. So Tuck's takeaway number one: translation enables revenue, but does not cause it. This is a very simplistic way of saying what we've been talking about, is just because if someone were like me were to say that localization does not drive revenue, I probably would not say that. But if I were, then I would not be totally inaccurate, because in a vacuum, localization does not drive revenue. It needs all of those other support services, such as like what Miguel was talking about, marketing support functions, HR support functions. And it's up to the internal managerial accounting of each team to understand how those costs get allocated. All right. Tuck's takeaway number two: there are more ways to add value than revenue. That's what we were just talking about. We saw this in this paper from 20 years ago that from Ben Sargent, talking about the intersection between measuring return on localization investment and customer experience, or CX or UX. So it's something, Ben's either a psychic or it's something that we've been talking about as an industry for a while. Tuck's takeaway number three here is we need to combine. Yeah, there's the typo. There's our first typo. We need to combine with metrics that influence other metrics. Wow, that sounded probably really smart when I typed it. I think this is, you know, what you were talking about, Miguel, is like we need to define metrics that matter. And I know you're always talking about strategic KPIs versus, you know, regular KPIs, and talking about things that matter. So those are my Tuck's takeaways. Miguel, I'll give you 30 seconds here if you've got any final words or rebuttals or closing remarks.
Yeah, we want to find metrics. We want to have working on finding indicators that we can associate with the value that they truly enable, and value such as revenue, loyalty, engagement. So if you have access to any metric in these categories, focus on those ones, because sooner or later you will find a correlation between engagement and localization, between loyalty and having the content localized. That's super important. So let's get obsessed with customer experience and how localization influences customer experience. And yeah, let's keep thinking and looking for those metrics that influence other metrics. I think that's the right mindset.
Agreed. And I wasn't going to plug it, but you can't talk about being obsessed with customer experience. I got a plug. Oh, no, I didn't update my graphic. Oh, shucky darn. Well, regardless, pretend that's a graphic of an awesome upcoming panel that I'm doing with Jonas Rydberg from Pactera Edge, talking about how to use artificial intelligence, AI, to create actually better customer experiences. And that's going to be on Thursday, November 18th. The LinkedIn event is already set up. It's going to be at 10 o'clock a.m. Pacific time. Once again, with Jonas Rydberg from Pactera Edge. So go ahead and sign up for that so that you get notified when we go live on that. Once again, my name is Tucker Johnson. I'm host of Dimsey Live, and it has been my pleasure to join all of us today. We had everybody stuck with us here. We had about 105 participants at one point, and we're ending the stream with about 95, I think. So Nice. Nice for hanging out, guys. I appreciate you. I appreciate our guest, Miguel Sepulveda. I appreciate...
There you go.
There we go, Miguel Sepulveda. I appreciate everybody in our industry who fills out NIMSI surveys and schedules briefings with our analysts so that we can include you in our published localization industry research. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, who are joining us here live today. I appreciate the dialogue and chat and everybody who has left comments, questions, and especially criticisms. And I look forward to next time. Until then, have a wonderful day.